So what I'm going to do is record in Zoom because I can't get it to record, and I'm going to just probably excerpt out just the audio as I normally do. So your images won't be recorded, and I'll make sure it's not your voices, just mine. All right. So, offering the gift of a deep exhale, a settling in. Into the simplicity of this moment right here. Feeling the solidity of contact between the body and the earth, or the floor, the chair, or the cushion. Letting there be any measure of relaxing into this support that's offered. Any measure of release that feels available to you in this moment. Gifting the body the opportunity to rest and to welcome in a greater measure of ease. For this next little while, there's nothing to do. Nowhere else to be. An opportunity for pausing and practicing presence. From this place of support, inviting a lengthening through the spine, a slight lifting of the crown of the head towards the sky. Inviting in a quality of energy, vitality, aliveness into your sitting. The miracle, the body's capacity to sit upright. and bringing awareness to the miraculous capacity of breathing. Finding the breath wherever it's most alive for you. That might be the felt sense of the breath entering and leaving the nostrils. The expansion and release of the rib cage. The rise and fall of the belly. Feeling the gentle movement of the breath. Almost as if you're being held in a rocking chair, being rocked and soothed by this familiar fluid rhythm. letting the breath be a precious point of contact with lived experience here and now. If you find yourself lost in thought, you're missing out on this precious opportunity to be fully alive right here. To be intimate with this breath. This next breath that has never happened before and will never happen again. So feeling what it's like to fully inhabit, fully experience just this next breath. And someday, you will take your last breath. And the breath will cease, and so you might, for the next few minutes, practice opening to the inquiry, what if this were my last breath? Just seeing what arises in you. What's the energy with which you might want to receive the preciousness of a last breath? as we come to the final minute of our practice together today, how might an appreciation for the preciousness of this breath, this life right here, translate into an appreciation for the preciousness of all life? So that it informs how you might move out into the world, in ways that support all beings, living with a greater degree of peace, ease, and freedom. May all beings know true happiness and be free from suffering. May it be so. So, this body is of the nature to die. There is no way to escape dying. Or maybe more colloquially, John Glenn, when he was 75, stated, "There's still no cure for the common birthday." Yeah, so we are in these bodies that age, and they fall apart, and eventually they fall away. And you might even, as we open to this contemplation today, just pause for a few moments and just feel into, you know, what is your relationship with death, particularly with the idea of your own death? Is there even a relationship? Sometimes there's complete avoidance or lack of acknowledgement. Sometimes there's fear or curiosity, or regret. Sadness or grief. It's often quite complex, our relationship with the idea of our own impermanence. And it's such an important, powerful practice, because as we have touched on at different points in these previous weeks. It's a gateway, it's a portal to life. Paradoxically, you know, it wakes us up. You know, the preciousness of being here. You know, being here at all is just quite a miracle. And there's a lot of common humanity. You know, I thought I'd start with a quote by Sam Harris because it captures so much of how we individually and I think culturally relate to death. He says, most of us do our best not to think about death, but there's always a part of our minds that knows this can't go on forever. Part of us always knows that we're just a doctor's visit away, a phone call away, from being starkly reminded with the fact of our own mortality or of those closest to us. I'm sure many of you in this room have experienced this in some form. You must know how uncanny it is to suddenly be thrown out of the normal course of your life and just be given a full-time job of not dying or caring for someone who is. The one thing people tend to realize at moments like this is that they wasted a lot of time when life was normal. It's not just what they did with their time. It's not just that they spent too much time working or compulsively checking email. It's that they cared about the wrong things. They regret what they cared about. Their attention was bound up in petty concerns year after year when life was normal. And this is a paradox, of course, because we all know this epiphany is coming. Don't you know this is coming? Don't you know that there's gonna come a day when you'll be sick or someone close to you will die, and you'll look back on the kinds of things that captured your attention and you'll think, what was I doing? You know this, and yet, if you're like most people, you'll spend most of your time in life tacitly presuming you'll live forever, doing things like watching a bad movie for the fourth time or bickering with your spouse. These things only make sense in light of eternity. So, you know, working with this practice, sometimes people are like, oh, I can't believe I dropped into a talk on death. What, you know, what was I thinking? Or why are we talking about this? It's such a beautiful teacher, I find, because it cuts through to what's important to help us see so clearly. You know, is this what matters? You know, is organizing my sock drawer what matters? Is, you know, answering, you know, one more email what matters? Is stopping and saying hello to that neighbor that I haven't seen without a mask for a year what matters? Is finding time, of making time, of prioritizing time to listen to a good friend who has something heartbreaking or joyful to share with us? Is that what matters? You know, and only each one of us can answer this in any given moment, but often we don't even ask the question. But if we can start to invite death into our practice, you know, it's like if we let death just sort of sit on our shoulder, you know, it might seem like a unappealing companion. It really often illuminates how we want to live. And we don't know how much time we get. And a practice I've really appreciated over the years is this practice of, what if this is my last breath? It's a practice we can use in our sitting, and it's a practice we can use in daily life. You know, I forget about this practice and then I pull it out of the sock drawer sometimes and try it on again for a while. And what I find is the question will start to pop up for me in daily life. You know, so when I'm really tangled in the minutiae, you know, of the to-do list, of sort of that energy where I'm not really living, I'm just checking the boxes, you know. And we all, I think, if we're honest, get pulled into this. And then we wake up. And that question helps me wake up. Even if I'm working on things on the to-do list, some of which are, you know, not perhaps the pinnacle of my lived experience, but are the mundane that help us stay alive, you know, keep the electricity on and make it through another day, to say, oh, what if this was my last breath? Like, what if writing this check was the last thing I did? Or what if putting this dish in the cupboard was the last thing I did? If I did that activity with full presence, it would have a very different meaning, a very different energetic impact. And I often think about the heart practices that we've worked with so much over this year, right? You know, metta or kindness and compassion and sympathetic joy and equanimity. And I often appreciate bringing death practice together with the heart practices. You know, I think about, okay, if this were my last breath, how do I want to meet my last breath? What quality of mind or heart might I want to die with? And ideally, I think dying with a quality of kindness or care or joy or equanimity would be a good way to go. And I don't know if we get to choose how we go or what state of mind is there. Because I haven't been there, right? You don't get a dress rehearsal with dying, that last moment of transition. But what I do know to be true from practice and from neuroscience is that what we practice is more available to us. So when we practice more presence with our mindfulness practice with the breath, when we practice more kindness through kindness and compassion practices, those neural pathways are more available. So I'm increasing the possibility that I might die in a state of peace or care or with an open heart. And so rather than leaving it to chance, part of what helps me practice on those days that maybe I feel busy, I have too much to do, or I'm tired, I think, okay, practicing will support me in not only a good life, but also a good death. It increases the odds, is how I look at it. It increases the odds. There's a Zen teaching that says, great is the matter of birth and death. Life passes swiftly and is easily lost. Awaken, awaken. Do not waste your life. Great is the matter of birth and death. Life passes swiftly and is easily lost. Awaken, awaken. Do not waste your life. So, I might pause here for today, and we'll offer the opportunity of small groups. It's always optional if you feel like that is in alignment with where you are today. And I would invite you to just reflect and share with one another in these next few minutes about, you know, what's your relationship with death, the idea that, oh, this body will die, or what might it be like to think about living with death on your shoulder, and so what I'm going to do